From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. With the Trump administration's decision to move the U.S. Embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, the U.S. is sending a clear message to the Israeli state about whose side it is on. Palestinians, who have struggled for independence and freedom for decades, have continued to rely on themselves for survival. Today, we'll cover one innovative way in which Palestinians are preserving their cultural heritage in the face of occupation, land theft, and war. A Palestinian woman named Vivian Sansour, who saw her people's agricultural heritage come under threat from Israeli settlements, climate change, and more, has started an heirloom seed library. Vivian Sansour is a trained anthropologist. She's worked with farmers in Honduras, Uruguay, and Palestine on issues related to agriculture and independence. And she now joins me to discuss the Palestinian Heirloom Seed Library, of which she is the founder. Welcome to the program, Vivian.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Sonali.
So how unique is Palestinian agriculture, and how critical is it to culture and heritage of Palestinian people?
Palestinian agriculture is unique, just as Guatemalan agriculture is unique, just as Peruvian agriculture is unique, just as Indian agriculture is unique, because it is one of the models of the world where a culture developed with interacting with its environment and with nature, where plant and culture sort of evolved together to create the world and the practices and the rituals that we know today. So in a lot of ways, agriculture informed and formed the culture of a people, in this particular case, obviously, the Palestinian people. And this is why we think that it's important to conserve and preserve, for example, the seed varieties of this agricultural heritage, because within these seeds lies the DNA of our identity, of our culture, of our ancestors, and of the intelligence and the beauty of our lineage and where we come from.
And so, of course, the foods that develop from the agriculture are woven into the culture as a whole. How do they feature into the songs and the traditions among Palestinians?
Yes, absolutely. Traditions, ritual, what you do, like, you know, many people, for example, get married after the olive harvest, because that's when they have already pressed their oil and they've sold it and they have some money to spend on having a wedding celebration. You know, different traditions, like when you make certain dishes in the summer, because that's when this heirloom tomato, it comes to full fruit. And so you make your tomato sauce at that time, or zucchini, whatever it is. Definitely the seasons, the crop itself, and all of it carry with it a certain tradition and activity.
So what are the threats facing this agricultural heritage? I mentioned Israeli settlements and climate change. Are those two of the big ones?
Definitely. I mean, farmers in Palestine, like farmers all over the world, are struggling to hold on to their practices. I'm talking about non-conventional farmers. Because of, first of all, a global system that is forcing farmers all over the world to drop their original seeds, to drop the seeds they were passed down through their ancestors, and to adopt new, quote-unquote, modern seeds that are better for you. Obviously, this comes at the cost of the traditions that we talked about just now. So when we lose the seed, with it we are also losing a crop that with it we carried a tradition.
So you're talking about the sort of industrialized food system that that upholds the shelf life of a piece of produce over flavor or other sort of markers of authenticity?
It's not just valuing shelf life over flavor. It's obviously valuing consumerism, quantity over quality. It's also saying that we don't need the farmer. You know, it's valuing commodity over humanity, over humans. So, for
Are there also
example,
genetically modified seeds that are being marketed to Palestinian farmers?
well, right now, supposedly we do not have genetically modified seeds that are used for commercial production. That's what, you know, supposedly is not happening. One of the research that I'm doing is to figure out from farmers what research is being done in their field without their consent, without their knowledge. So, for example, Monsanto does have an office in Tel Aviv, and they do have an office in Amman, Jordan. And we, you know, supposedly it's only for research, that they only use these facilities and these farms for their research. What kind of research is happening there, we really don't know. And also, we know through history that many oppressed people have been used as field research without their knowledge. So we supposedly we don't have it, but we really don't know. I think that further research has to happen, and we hope, as the Palestine Heirloom Seed Library, to be able to provide a little bit more information about that and to learn more. But for now, the main threats basically are the overconsumption of hybrid seeds that have replaced our heirloom varieties. So, for example, farmers that used to make their own seeds every year now buy 99% of their seeds and their seedlings from nurseries and Israeli agribusiness companies. And the other thing is obviously the overwhelming use of chemical inputs in farms. So we have an overflowing amount of greenhouses that are being funded and built under the name of agricultural development and economic development. But what these greenhouses are doing, this new method is, first of all, transforming the Palestinian farmer from a producer to a consumer. So actually, chipping away at the little autonomy that we have.
So, sort of food sovereignty under threat.
Oh, food sovereignty is definitely under threat. In fact, one of the main things is that we no longer produce our food like we used to. So, for example, we have a big problem that started after Oslo, the Oslo Agreement, which is that our economy became linked with the Paris Protocol, with Israeli economy, and with that, for example, the price of tobacco went skyrocketing. Not that I'm a supporter of tobacco at all. In fact, tobacco has destroyed our farms because these tobacco companies saw an opportunity in going to farmers who were already not making a lot of money, saying to them, "You don't need to grow food anymore. We'll rent your property. We'll rent your land, and give you whatever rent you need, if you let us just grow tobacco there." And so now you have fields and fields and fields that were the breadbasket for okra, for wheat, for tomatoes, for cauliflower, now completely just being planted with tobacco, which, as everybody knows, it's destroying the soil and it is destroying the health, not to mention, obviously, the destruction of the biodiversity that is coming from that.
So, how did the Palestinian Heirloom Seed Library get started? How did you decide that this was a way to preserve Palestinian agricultural heritage?
Well, I've been working with farmers in the field for the last decade of my life. It's where I feel I become alive, and it's where I feel at home also, in the sense that this is where I feel I regain my sense of self in a time that everything around me is telling me that where I come from and who I am is not worth anything. And so for me, it was in the beginning a kind of obviously my love for agriculture, but also my love for a heritage that I think is kind of genius. For example, the more I learned while working with farmers that our ancestors developed these seeds over generations of selection that produce delicious zucchinis, for example, using no water at all, in fact, zero irrigation.
I thought that was suited to the climate and the soil.
Yes, yes. And so to think that we come from a people who have been so respectful to their environment that they did not dig wells and instead they actually worked with their climate, with their different microclimates to develop seeds that are actually able to produce and give life rather than destroy life. So I thought that this was really an amazing thing. And whenever I spoke to farmers, they talked obviously about seeds and the ability to access their old seeds, or that they have to buy new seeds, and about all these different extension agents that came from agribusiness companies to tell them about using these new and better seeds. So this became obviously an area of interest to me. With particularly one story about a watermelon that grew in Jenin. And everybody, when I would interview them and talk to them, they would talk about this Jaddu'i watermelon. And women would talk about giving birth in the fields of watermelon. People proudly would talk about how their fathers or grandparents used to ship these big watermelons to Damascus and Beirut. And so when I asked, well, where is this amazing watermelon you're all talking about? Most people said, well, it doesn't exist anymore. What are you talking about?
Wow.
Farmers would tell me, you're asking about the dinosaur. This watermelon doesn't exist anymore. So that obviously made me very curious to look for this watermelon. And it all really started by kind of looking for this watermelon. And then a few years later, I found this farmer who said, yes, I have a few seeds. And then he gave them to me. He was very generous. And he gave them to me, actually, sadly, because he no longer thought that anyone wanted them. And that, you know, no one wants to grow this variety anymore, because now we grow this hybrid variety of watermelon. Well, other elements also played a role. But in the end, I planted these watermelons. We made seeds from these watermelons. And I started this little library of seeds in my home. And I would post things on Facebook. And then everything kind of grew very fast, faster than I had anticipated, to the point where now we are engaging several farmers. And hopefully this year we will engage 20 farmers with the help of Newfield Foundation in California, actually, where we will hopefully revive four varieties that are threatened with extinction.
So the library, it's not a seed bank, it's a seed library. How does that
Yes.
work, and how can Palestinians who are inspired by the fact that you've managed to save some of these varieties grow them themselves? I'm assuming the library itself was housed in the Palestinian territories?
Yes, the library itself, well, I mean, okay, we have a center studio called El Bir Arts and Seeds where the library lives, and it's in the Bethlehem area. And anyone can come and check out seeds, if you will, the way you check out a book, or you check out some seeds. We ask people to grow the seeds and make seeds and give to other people. Our purpose is that you come and take seeds from us this year, and then you don't ever need us again.
Or maybe even bring back seeds to replenish your supplies.
Yeah, that's the idea, is to bring back seeds. And the reason, like, really, you know, a lot of people don't bring back the seeds, but a lot of people do, or they bring something new that they, you know, that we didn't have, and they want to share. But the main thing is that the seed library is not just about the structure that exists in this space in Bethlehem, but that it's everywhere. It's in the fields. It's keeping the seed alive in the fields of the farmers. It's keeping these traditions that are associated with each variety alive. And this is why this year we built a traveling kitchen that actually comes apart and fits in a car. And we will be traveling to 10 different communities throughout the year. And in each community, we will stop and talk about these varieties, make borrowing seeds possible, give seeds, maybe learn. It will be a way for us to also learn together about new varieties. Every time in the field, you learn about something new. Some elder comes and says, you know, oh, we used to grow this, I don't know, like recently someone told me about a tomato that I've never heard of. So I'm actually interested this spring to go and learn more about it. So every time there's something you learn. So it's a journey that we are taking sort of together. And part of the importance of actually having these seeds not just stored in a bank, but also propagated in the field, is that just like our ancestors developed these seeds that acclimated to the environment, we are going to need more and more these seeds to select from them the varieties and the strands that will survive, for example, more droughts and the change in the climate that we're witnessing.
Well, Vivian, where can people find out more about your work? Is there a website or any place online that they can find out?
Yes. First, they can follow us on Facebook, either at the Palestine Heirloom Seed Library or Elbir Arts and Seeds. That's E-L-B-E-I-R, Arts and Seeds. We are actually working on a website that will be launched hopefully in the next few weeks. And that will be artsandseeds.org or artsandseeds.net. But hopefully that will be going live in the next few weeks.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us and good luck with the project.
Thank you so much for having me.
Vivian Sansour is a trained anthropologist who has worked with farmers in Honduras, Uruguay, and Palestine on issues related to agriculture and independence. We've been discussing the Palestinian Heirloom Seed Library, which she is the founder of. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.